Greetings, Enterprise crew. Captain Ian here to assure you there hasn't been a glitch in the Pod Matrix. With Lower Decks Season 5 right around the corner, we thought you might like a recap of how we left the crew of the Cerritos at the end of Season 4. Of course, that recap will take the form of the 2023 versions of myself and Ambassador Danae rambling and sinning as we so often do. We'll be back Wednesday, the 30th of October, for a brand new episode in your subspace pod feed covering the Lower Decks Season 5 premiere. Until then, live long and podspur. I really need some new pod puns. Ambassador?
I got chills. And I'm like, I'm watching a fucking cartoon about Star Trek.
Captain's Pod, Stardate 81-11-23.2. Welcome aboard the Starship's Enterprise, and thank you for joining us as we take a brief shore leave from the world of CinemaSins to explore the universe of Star Trek. I'm your Captain Ian Whittington, and with me as always, rumour has it we had to change her name due to royalty issues, but that's just a load of bullshit that I need to remove from my brain. It's Ambassador Danae.
That's funny. I have changed my name.
You? Oh no, you have. That's not bullshit. Dang it.
But it wasn't for royalties.
It wasn't.
But maybe it is now. Maybe you're inspiring me to change my name again.
And claim all of the Jennifer royalties that you out on for all of these years.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, anyone named Jennifer.
That was eye-opening last week. The live fact-checking that we had we had going on.
Well, in what way?
Well, the Nick Locarno thing has just been in my head. The fact that we got Tom Paris because of royalties, and it's just not. And I'm sure I've seen that on like a Blu-ray DVD extra thing where they've said this to me, but I've just invented memories. Don't trust your memories, people. That's this week's PSA.
That's right. If you think that you've given us a 5-star review, you haven't. Go do it now.
Go do it right now.
No, amazing. I know what you mean about being corrected and feeling that defensiveness of like, no.
This has to be right. This is my reality.
This is foundational.
Yeah.
And then you, we stopped the show, did our own research, and then restarted the show. And I'm so happy. Like, for me, the big revelation was I knew I liked doing a live show. Mm-hmm. But I really love that the audience that's watching us live are sort of becoming part of our production team in a way.
I love it because we would have put that out. I would have continued the myth. I would have sounded like an idiot to anybody that knows better.
So we just instantly corrected it.
The community brain. No one person is an expert. So yes.
Before we move on from it though, I must say it is nice for you to have kept it in because we edit the show. You could have easily re-recorded something and put it seamlessly into the show to where all of the podcast people who can't join the live show would have never known that you were absolutely fucking wrong.
Yeah,
but you kept it in.
If only I'd thought of that, then I could have just deleted. No, it was a choice. I think I love acknowledging that I can be wrong and that my information can be wrong and that all of our brains can be wrong and that we should always be humble with our knowledge. Unless you know you're right, then you can dig your heels in.
Wow.
Yeah,
that just went everywhere.
That was a
shotgun blast of you.
Okay, should we do some emails?
Yes.
Let's do it.
Emails.
Okay, hailing frequencies open, everyone. It's time for us to read your emails from Discord, Twitter, and, well, email. We have a beautifully, perfectly formatted email from Bethany Chatfield. It begins, computer begin transmission. Good day, Captain. Good day, Ambassador. Like so many people, I would love to see more Strange New World episodes. Strange New Worlds, plural? Yeah, Strange New Worlds episodes. But what if instead of just adding more episodes to future seasons, they went back and did extended editions of seasons that have already happened? That way we could get more episodes with Hema, like a Hema's Day episode, or episodes that can flesh out some more relationship stuff. Oh, shit, there is relationships in this email.
Oh, I like it because it's relationships.
Oh, I didn't mean to.
That's good.
Yes, relationships feel less like a Disney romance. And I'm thinking in brackets, that's the La'an and Kirk thing. What are your thoughts on that? I haven't seen another TV show do that deliberately, I don't think. That would be really cool.
So the idea is that we don't get a new episode, we get the extended version.
Or we get an additional episode from season one. So like that would then become 11 seasons. Like we go back and like, you know what? We needed some more Hemmer. So let's do more around Hemmer. Or we go back and do the child that's been left on the planet to suffer and get tortured. We do an extra episode fixing that.
What I love about this idea is that it feels a bit like Lower Decks meets Strange New Worlds. Because there was an episode where it was sort of like, while the A-team is doing this, this is what you didn't see.
Yes, exactly.
And I really enjoy that. But I mean, I think this is a super good idea. In order to pull it off, there would need to be some resources. So in a world where there's like unlimited resources to go and make this happen, I am super on board with it. Or we just go back to making longer seasons again.
Right. 20 episode seasons, please.
But I don't know if that's our world any longer. It really doesn't seem like it is, which bums me out because I feel like we are missing out on something. But let's go to 15. Let's go to, you know, let's just go a little bit longer, especially when you have a set like Strange New Worlds. Like
that beautiful ship.
It's glorious to look at.
Completely agree. Where I've landed is that I wouldn't want it to replace season 3. I'd want it as well as, which just leads us back to having more episodes per season. So I want us to, I think how Star Trek usually ends up doing this is they'll continue into the future. And in anything that's like intriguing or has perked the interest, they'll go back and do a follow-up episode on it instead of this adding extra episodes. But I would love it as a between seasons thing. If we just have 20 minutes of this is what happened after this episode, or this is what happened that you didn't see. But I wouldn't want it instead of a season 3. But it's an interesting format thought experiment.
It is. And I would love also for this to just become a standard. Like, what if while recording these shows, they purposefully had an extra 15 minutes of content that they know is going to hit the editing cutting room floor, or they could just film in adjacent to the main story.
Yeah.
And then they release those bits later. So you're still using the moment and the momentum of creating the show while it's normally being recorded, but you know that the bite-sized bits are going to be released in a different format later. But yeah, it requires a lot of forethinking.
Oh my goodness, yeah.
Obviously, we need to just forward this email on to some executive and be like, hello, do this.
Exactly.
We can brainstorm with you.
please bring us onto the show. Any of them, any of the shows. I don't care which one. Amazing. Well, we do have, we got a lot to get through this week, so no more time for emails, but we do have a nice little pile building up. So if you haven't heard your email yet, it will be on a future episode, I promise. And let's get back to the show. Okay, this week's episode, it's the season finale of season 4 of Lower Decks Ambassador. We've watched another 10 episodes of Lower Decks.
Yeah.
Before we get into what this title is and our predictions and whatnot, how do you feel about the season overall?
I've really enjoyed it. I think that we've seen some of the parts of the show that sing really well in different episodes, you know, like their humor and the quick wit and the faster pace, the Boimler freakouts. But they've also developed the characters enough that they're shifting away from the first season iteration, which is a really brave and important thing to do in when you let your characters evolve, maybe even in ways that you don't want.
I think that's one of my favorite things.
Yeah. So like, for example, this is a pretty extreme example, but you've got like The Simpsons. These are characters that are forever and equally in one frame of mind. Like Bart is Bart. Homer is Homer. And those kinds of shows become this sort of staple in existence of like, I mean, people refer to them forever. And obviously in The Simpsons case, they've been around for so long. It's insane how many seasons they're into now. Yeah. I don't even remember. But those characters might have little blips and moments of developing within an episode, but it's almost like every episode is a reset back to the beginning of the day, which is a really interesting concept.
Yeah.
However, this isn't that. This isn't, and it could. It could have that similar like Rick and Morty vibe where every episode is like a reset. And sure, some things are, you know, built upon and these super fans will know them and point them out and things like that. But it's sort of like an adventure every single time. And for this show not to do that and show some depth and intention of evolution is really exciting for me.
Yeah.
And it, you know, give us some laughs and some really fun animation to watch. It's not something that lasts too long. And it's really fun for you, the super fan, if I'm picking up on that.
Oh, this season's been great. I think I liked it better than season three, which I don't remember off the top of my head. But I do remember we had, like, I think we had a lot more inconsistencies and, like, frustrations around Mariner in particular last season. There were, like, some really great episodes, but then some wheel spinning. This season feels like we've had way more momentum and progression with the crew getting promoted, Mariner actually dealing with why she does the things that she does, spending less time with Boimler, I guess, and his struggles. But I think the stories have been solid, the references have been solid, some of the loose ends they've tied up from TNG have been so much fun. So yeah, this has been a really, really, really great season, and I'm kind of really pumped for season five. Oh my goodness.
Already?
I'm ready for it. I would have it next week. I would love it.
Wow.
So, this week's episode is the finale. Last we left the crew, Mariner had been kidnapped by Nick Locarno, who we found out is behind the alien ship that is kidnapping all of these species and causing havoc across the quadrant. This episode is called Old Friends, New Planets. Any predictions for how this is going to get wrapped up?
Well, you and chat have talked about some Genesis machine, so let's just assume that we're going to make a new planet, because we have to see what Nick has been up to, what he has wanted from all of these ships, why he has been collecting them. Was it for pure chaos creation? Was it because he was looking for something specific, like a device of some kind? So New Planet kind of tells me maybe we're looking at someone trying to create a new world that they can dominate, which would be kind of that makes sense. And then, yeah, you're going to have everyone trying to figure out how to tackle this problem and why it's a problem for everyone. We also left Mariner's crew that she had assembled on the planet. They had just taken back over the warbird.
I think it was a bird of prey. Bird of prey. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. I couldn't remember the. Yeah. 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 So they're going to be involved somehow. So I'm really curious how this is going to go and where it leads in the end, which, you know, most shows will wrap up with a nice sort of everyone getting together. And I think my question will be, does it end with a Mariner accepting some kind of a position, like a higher rank? So my broad prediction as a planet, my specific prediction is that she'll be given her own crew.
Mariner gets her own command?
Yeah.
That's a big one. Yeah. That would be show rocking. That would be really interesting. I love that. Well, my big prediction is that Locarno's plan is to destabilize the quadrant. Like, it is to set all of these people at war with each other so he can be an arms dealer or come out on top, or just kind of show that Starfleet isn't the way forward after being rejected by Starfleet. So I'm a little bit nebulous, but that's my overall plan for Locarno. Oddly specific, everyone gets demoted back to ensign.
Oh my gosh. What a pendulum we are on.
Right? We're either both massively wrong or somewhere in the middle.
Why is it either that we're wrong or it's in the middle? How about we're right?
No, because if we're not going to be right, but they'll either stay the same.
One of us could be right.
Or one of us could be right. Yeah, I guess. It's possible. I would love that.
It's going to be me, right? It's me.
Captain Mariner.
I'm the one that's right. Captain Mariner, yeah.
Is she ready?
Does it mean her mom dies?
Then I just killed off Mariner's mom. You heard
and
it
then she
first.
Takes over the ship. Yeah, like normal command, it wouldn't go to her second in command. Of course not. It would go to her daughter. Like some.
You
sort
can't
of
trust Ransom in charge. No. Just get nepotism wins all the way. That's Mariner immediately gets the ship.
Exactly.
Well, before the ambassador kills off any more characters, let's head over to the holodeck to watch the episode, and we'll see you all in 10 forward two to walk out. Energize.
Oh, fuck!
Welcome to 10 Forward, part of the show where we grab a drink from the replicator and share our immediate thoughts and feelings on the episode we just watched together. Most important question...
Third.
What is your beverage of choice? This week it has to be a beverage. I'm putting my foot down.
Oh, okay. Oh, is it like a beverage from the show, or is it, you know what, just something to get drunk? Because let's just get drunk, because that in the vein of in the love of the end of this episode.
Yeah, whatever is going to get Freeman and Mariner fucked up. Let's go drunk. Yeah, I'll join you in that as a serenade and a toast to the season finale of Lower Decks season 4. No more.
No more
Lower Decks until like the end of next year, maybe. We're definitely getting a season 5. But until then, give us a synopsis.
Yo! Totally prepared for that.
Yeah, every week.
In this episode, everything comes together, makes sense. There's battles, there's captaining, there's mutinies, there is music. And true to what we thought was going to be happening, everything has a happy ending and the entire crew stays completely together in the end. No one dies and no one leaves the ship for another adventure.
Great. that sums it up.
AKA, I'm in denial.
Yeah. I never know if you're actually done with the synopsis.
Why? Can't you tell with my awkward pauses that I take as I try to think of my next thought?
Because sometimes they can be like 10-second pauses, and I don't want to, if there's more to come, I don't want to cut you off. I want you to say your piece.
Just a reminder, podcast listener, you are thankful that you're not watching the live show for those 10-second long pauses where I'm just sitting here and like...
I cut them out. Yeah, the synopsis takes literally 17 minutes and I cut it all down. So it turns out that Nick Locarno's plan has been to create his own version of Starfleet, which is a free world, free of the limitations of being told what to do, because he can tell you what to do, and that's what counts. Mariner has to prevent him from using the Genesis device, while Freeman and the crew have to find a way to smash through a shield. And then the finale happens. Overall thoughts and feelings, Danae.
I loved it.
Yes, me too.
You did? Okay.
So much fun. This is a great adventure.
One thing I didn't expect to love about it that I ended up really like cluing into was the music in this episode. I don't know if I've not been paying attention to the music in previous episodes, but I feel like this episode really brought the music.
It did. You're not imagining it. The scores can be quite subtle, but this has some incredible soundtracks that are variations on themes that we've heard previously. And some themes that are just lifted from the Wrath of Khan whole cloth entirely, which is so... There is a scene in particular where I got chills because the way they looped in the Wrath of Khan music was so fucking good. So good.
Into it. I wrote down music, music, music so many times. And I think it was like we had really interesting space battles going on. You know, what Star Trek fan doesn't want to see all of the ships battling each other somehow? And
of course,
because of the uniqueness of this season, kidnapping or taking away all of these different kinds of ships that have sort of been collected in this secret spot. And now we get to have this secret spot revealed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we get to see all these unique ships together, which for me, I'm like, oh, cool. Different shaped ships. That's interesting. For you, I'm sure you're like freaking out. Were you freaking out?
Oh, I loved it. Like there's lots of reasons I was freaking out. The ship that Mariner has, the Steamrunner class, I have thoughts about that. The sideways warbird that we get to see in action again. The Orion ship was fun. The glory shots of the Cerritos actually being a tugboat was genius.
Oh my God. I really, how did we not see that coming?
How
did we not see that coming?
How did I not see most of this episode coming?
On this show, we've talked about why the name of the burrito is in the placement that it's in. And it was because it was like a towing thing, I thought. And so here it's actually towing something.
Yeah.
It's like a little engine that could.
It's
or,
perfect.
No, wait.
It's what it's built to do. You don't have to manufacture anything. The little tea kettle toaster that could.
No. It's not the tea kettle that could. No.
Toaster?
It's like this childhood tugboat story. It was about this little tugboat that was, you know, tugging the big ship.
Little engine that could.
No, that's about a train. Okay. Anyway, we got to see the Cerrito Burrito tug a big ship, and that was fucking awesome.
Yeah, like I said, you don't have to manufacture anything. This is what the ship was built to do. It was so, so fun. I mean, I could nitpick that you are lifting the great James Horner score and not making, like, you're using someone else's work and trading off of that, but it's Star Trek, and it fits for the themes that are going on, because Wrath of Khan is when the Genesis device was first used. So it's more of an homage, because you're reimagining that. Like, oh, it's... Yeah, no, I really love this episode. Great balance, not too complicated. I think it's a really, really good send-off for season four, without a doubt.
They did a lot of really good things, I feel. We got a good space battle. We got to have a hand-to-hand combat scene.
Mm.
We got to see Mariner being Mariner, but Mariner for the Starfleet, which was the big question for me is, what are they going to do with this character? What kind of a personality is she going to take on in this final episode? You know, where is she going to land? And her chaos and her drive to survive and her willingness to do incredibly dangerous things for her own reasons, it's aligned with Starfleet. It's aligned with what's better. And so we got to see her do some really crazy shit that kept me on the edge of my seat in a way, because I didn't know exactly. I didn't think they were going to kill off, you know, Mariner by any sense of the imagination. But it was still like, ooh, what's going to happen? Because they can kind of do whatever they want. But yeah, I really, really enjoyed it. I had a good time. But for me, the big win on this one was the watching all of the ships doing fun ship stuff and nebulouses and ice, and you got the music and everything. Yeah. It just was all hitting for me. Yeah.
There's a lot of classic Adventure Trek stuff that happens, like hiding in the nebula, finding a planet, doing shenanigans with venting plasma in a nebula. There's just some classic Trek stuff that's going on, and ignoring your commands from Starfleet and telling the crew, well, you can join me, but I'm not going to force you to, and just that camaraderie of one ship versus the universe. Sinful as heck, but I love it. That's the kind of Star Trek I love.
Should we talk about our predictions before we get into the specifics? Because I feel pretty good about mine.
Okay. Interesting.
Because I said Boimler was going to be captain.
Okay. Let's backpedal. Because Danae actually was quite impressive, but accidentally. So her her big prediction was that, it's kind of crazy, that Nick Locarno's overall goal was to make a new planet for himself and his people so that he could rule over them. Now, he does make a planet, but that was not his plan. It's kind of insane.
Yeah, so he did want to rule over the people in the end, but more like a fleet rather than like a planet.
Yeah, he wasn't aiming to use the Genesis device for that reason.
Yeah, I can't get that one. And I can't get my oddly specific. I can't get my oddly specific one either, because I said that Mariner was going to become captain, and she didn't. Actually, Boimler was in the captain's chair, which was delightful.
Oh, it was great. I'm glad they didn't mess around with that too much. They let him have his moment. It was great. But yeah, your specific one was Mariner gets her own command by the end of the episode. And that did not happen, although her and Boimler did have their own commands during the episode. So some really interesting adjacent predictions going on. My big one was that Locarno was basically wanting to destabilize Starfleet and show the universe that there's a better way to go about things.
I think you get it.
I kind of get that.
I think you get this point, because
the gist of it is what I thought. He was alienated and wanted to make his own Starfleet. Because he got kicked out.
Which he was attempting to do. He made the big, like, hey, come over here and hang out on my side of the world kind of broadcast.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I think you get that point.
It's a typical, you kicked me out, well, fine. I'm going to make my own club. I didn't want to be in your club anyway.
It looked pretty cool.
Very childish. My very specific one was everybody would be demoted back to Ensign, which would have been a swing. But it did not happen. And I'm glad it didn't.
Although everybody almost got in major trouble for joining. Oh,
that was never going to happen.
Our captain.
Never. No. Never happens.
Wouldn't it have been funny if everybody was reduced to Ensign? Like,
oh my God. Even
and
Captain
that's how
Freeman.
The next season. Yeah. The next season starts with the entire crew having been reduced to a lower deck somewhere.
Well, back to square one for all of us then.
Mm-hmm.
Well, let's kick off the episode. We started with a flashback to Mariner back at Starfleet Academy with her friend Cito, young Nick Locarno, Wesley, and the poor chap that dies. So how did you feel about that opening, and were you a bit lost based on our explanation last week? Did it fit into place? How did it work for you?
Honestly, if we hadn't had the conversation last week, I think it would have been a confusing piece for me.
Yeah.
So I was glad that we had the discussion. I feel like the show continues to do a good job of trying to think about the new viewer, and they gave just as much information as they needed to give through Handsome, who was like, I think he had a couple of lines about who this
bit
person
of expositional
is.
Lines,
just,
yeah.
But just a couple things. And then, you know, we get to see some of the dynamic of the flashback. But that flashback didn't, it didn't really tell the fullness of our conversation. So I don't think that I would have understood the gravity of that moment, even what went on for her friend or the person that she was looking after. I forget their name.
Cito.
Yeah. Like the whole Cito thing, the gravity of that was revealed last episode with like her motivation for, or was it last episode? Yeah last episode.
Yeah.
Their motivation.
What's interesting for me is that I'm split in two minds about it. For the story and the episode, I don't think it's necessary. I think it's a bit fluffy and it's kind of there to just show, hey, Mariner was here. Bet you didn't realize that. And isn't that cool? But it doesn't really inform much about the story that we don't get through exposition. 75% of me, though, is like, fuck yeah, that was amazing. I loved it so much. Because that takes place before the episode called First Duty, that where we see everything happens, the trial happens, the cover-up, Locarno getting kicked out of Starfleet Academy and everything. This is like days or something before that, or weeks before that. So for me, it's really interesting to see the build-up to what instigated them doing this banned Starburst maneuver. And then Mariner coming in and just being like, "She, that's where she was during TNG. It kind of tweaked something in my brain.
Look at her. She's like, teeny tiny.
She's out there. So I know that during, it places her in the Star Trek
world
library really well for me. So for me, I absolutely loved it. But as a, seeing the episode as a whole, I don't think it was really, really needed.
Yeah. The official timeline, 13 years ago, means this season takes place in 2381, said somebody in the chat. So,
yeah, which means not as much. That's when I thought season one started, or 2379, something like that, which means that 4 years haven't passed.
Right.
4 years have passed for us, but we're seeing
like in
more
the,
condensed.
In the Lower Decks universe, it hasn't been that
much. It's only
time.
Been a couple of years. Yeah. Which is really, really interesting, because that doesn't follow the trend of TNG, Voyager, Deep Space Nine, etc., who are like 1 year, one season. So yeah, interesting. Yeah, so moving out of there, well, there was one more interesting thing. They actually brought back the actor that played Cito, lended her voice to animated Cito, which it's so cool that we get to use these same actors. You could get away with it not being the same actors, but it's almost like a nice courtesy that you're a part of Star Trek history. Do you want to come back and give us a few lines? It's really cool.
Yeah.
Really,
absolutely.
Really, really cool.
Yeah, and I love the world of Star Trek. You'll see the same actor picking up different characters and coming back in for, you know, different people, like we saw with the person who plays Hemmer. So it's kind of really fun. They get to fold in on themselves.
They do.
And you don't have to do much more than just get in a microphone to do something like that, which is nice.
Yeah.
It's not like she had to get back into the wool uniform.
Oh my goodness. But I would. I would get into uniform. Cotton. It's got to be cotton, hasn't it? Or polyester.
I hope so.
Something like that.
Yeah, I hope so.
Anything else that stood out for you, Ambassador? What were some of your big moments? Or did you have any questions?
About the first part of the episode?
No, just in general.
No. Oh, okay. Okay. No, I think this sets it up really nicely. You know, it forces the Cerrito to take a standpoint of going against Starfleet in order to accomplish the goal of saving Mariner, which I thought was smart. They were given kind of the explanation that because there's so many different groups involved, different people involved, that they don't want Starfleet to just be attacking anybody that's left over inside these spaces. But they didn't really do a good job of explaining what happened to the rest of the crews. I guess we were to assume that they were
they
all
went
sent
into
to
hiding.
The planet.
No, they went into hiding. So they said that they went into hiding. That was it.
No. I mean, like, at the beginning of the episode, we see that each ship is piloted by the people who were in mutiny. So essentially, Nick has told every single one of these people the ship, like, hey, you can have your ship and do things your way.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the idea is that the entire crew was beamed down to the planet to survive. Okay.
Yeah, that's what I think. And then they were retrieved.
Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense.
That makes sense to me.
So the Starfleet doesn't want anyone to go and engage with that, because they don't want to start a war, like where we're shooting down a ship that includes a couple people that, yeah, they're the Ferengi are pissed at, but they don't want to lose those people or their ship. So stand down until all of the political stuff happens. And of course, Mama Bear's like, fuck that. That's not happening.
Yeah.
And it really kicks into gear when Mariner takes things into her own hand. And this is maybe my favorite part of the episode.
I was really happy and like relieved when this happened. I was ready to write a sin, which was, oh, we've got the cliche of Mariner is going to leave some kind of secret code in the transmission saying that, yes, I'm on Nick's side, but right. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Here's your secret code. And then Freeman is like, Mariner sent us a secret code, which means this is her plan. But instead, she just kicks the doors down and says, no, fuck you.
I love it so much.
It's
so
fun.
It's so her.
Just steal the Genesis device, name it GD, and then run away.
It's so good. Because I was with you. Nick kidnaps her and essentially begins to tell her that she's the defected Starfleet officer,
just
which
assumes,
she isn't. Yeah. And Mariner kind of seems like she might be going along with it, obviously for survival. And then she's put on screen to everyone. I kept thinking, oh, this is when they're going to go down the storyline of, you know, Mariner has defected and she's rebelling and she's blowing up her own career. And then it's going to be saved by the end of the episode. But no, they didn't even like, not even for a split second,
no,
go that direction.
This guy sucks.
She's like, yes, yeah. And it was so needed. It was the humor that this show does so well.
Yeah.
And it really showed me, like I said at the beginning, kind of the character of Mariner. And I really loved it. Watching her grab this thing and just like run out was delightful.
It was so great.
So, but she gets into the ship. And my question is,
okay,
she gets in there and she gives it some kind of a thing. It says, welcome Captain Carol Freeman. Who the fuck is that?
Captain Carol Freeman?
Yeah.
That's Captain of the Cerritos.
Oh, it's her
mom. That's
her
mom. Yeah, so she has her mom's command code.
That just tells you how much I don't remember about these
That was amazing.
Names.
That
I just call
beautiful.
Her Captain Mom in my head.
Yeah, Captain Mama
okay.
Bear.
Okay, so she knows her own mom's passcode.
Oh, that is 100% Mariner. I buy that.
But so does that mean that the ship is... Okay. So the what ship was she on then? Was it one of her mom's old ships?
No, because, like, so captains will have their own... Captains will have... I love that the chairs give you so much shit for not knowing one of the main characters' names.
Do
it's amazing.
Do you not remember
That's
who
so
is,
good.
Is
Do
doing
you,
the
Have
show?
You met Danae? Hello?
Have you met me? I it's call amazing. Her Captain Mom all the time. I just call her Captain.
Captain, basically, in an emergency, a captain can take control of another ship with their command code. So this is like, you can get on board and it gives you access because you're a captain in Starfleet. If there's like a lieutenant that's in charge of a ship because of a disaster, the captain can swoop in and take command and the computer will recognize their control access.
So you can, as a captain, pop onto another ship,
yeah,
punch in your codes and take over.
Essentially, yes. If the captain has gone rogue or there's something like that, you can pull rank. But yeah, it's a thing. Kirk does it in The Wrath of Khan, interestingly. But that's a prefix code. It's a bit different.
That kind of bums me out. Yeah, maybe you're thinking, oh, Danae, you should be ashamed of yourself for not remembering that it's her mother.
Nope,
and that would bum
all.
Me out. But no, I was thinking it'd be some funny character that she like idolized as a person and she memorized their code.
Interesting. No, it's just her mom's code. And apparently that works. while we're on the ship, I am so happy they used this stupid fucking ship.
With a joystick?
The Steamrunner class, yeah. I mean, the joystick.
This little joystick thing that pops out.
Just ridiculous. I mean, that's an Insurrection nod because Riker has the manual steering column nonsense.
I love it.
So good. But the Steamrunner class has kind of been the butt of the Star Trek community as just being a dumb ship. Like, right. It just looks stupid because it's just this, like, flat thing. And I've always enjoyed, I've always, like, kind of shit on it a bit because the nacelles, like, there was an episode where they're Boimler and Rutherford have a room and it's right next to the nacelles that are shining into their room. These nacelles are buried in the ship, and I just imagine them pumping out radiation into the ship. Like, I imagine they should be on arms for a reason, and it's a dumb-looking ship, but I kind of like it because it looks a bit derpy, and it's a little bit of a stupid ship. But I love that they used it instead of like, you could have had an Excelsior class in there. You could have had like any number of classes, but you picked the Steam Runner.
Well, I don't know so anything funny. About the types of ships, but I always find it interesting to see the different shapes that they come up with. Not only for the Starfleet, which seems to follow like a similar pattern, obviously, for recognition in war, you want to have similar patterns. But the different kinds of ships that we get to see from the others as well. But it's always like lacking that joystick. So I don't care what the ship looked like. I love that, first of all, it looked like it was old school with like the wood paneling that's mentioned in this episode.
Yes.
The carpeting and wood paneling and stuff. It looked like it had that old vibe. And then the joystick pops out and I was like, hee, this is fun.
I mean, that's definitely an Insurrection nod. And yes, I have always thought that Insurrection joystick was just dumb.
We send it.
We send the heck out of it. We send it.
I don't know. I think it makes sense. It's the evolution of what we already do. You got to have a backup plan.
It's true. But regardless, the stuff that Mariner does with the ship is so
It's
cool.
really fun. Yeah.
It's
if we
a
just,
great sequence.
If we don't go in sequence of the show, we just kind of skip around in the show and talk about what Mariner does with the ship. It was a lot of fun. She goes into a cloud. She flies through some like ice debris stuff. And she's like a little standoff seek and find sort of game. There's different kinds of ships that are tailing her, so we get to see 1D cloak and we get to see different kinds of activity with different sorts of ships. And that was when the music was so intense. I was really, really having a good time. But one of my favorite shots is when she goes to hit that wall, this trinar or whatever,
the trinar
force
shield.
Field thing. That was really fun because she like basically scrapes up against it and it looks
Tron. Yes.
It looks a bit this, and you got the shields all like lit up, and then oh my God, I know this has nothing to do with her ship, but talking about other cool shit we got to see a massive Orion like warship like slam into this thing and blow up. And
I love that that's their plan. They go to all of this effort to get an Orion ship. It doesn't work. What are we going to do? It's like Infinity War. You threw a moon at me. We're just going to throw a ship at the shield.
It felt like, you know, like using the tractor beam to like whip around something.
Yeah.
But it could have been, I don't know, it could have been a little bit lame. And as I was watching it, I kept thinking like, why is this so fucking badass? And it was the music.
The music helps so much.
It just hits so well
and
at every
that
point.
Is the part that's pulled from Wrath of Khan.
Was it?
That sequence is directly out of the... That's pulled out of Wrath of Khan. It's so, so good. It gives me chills. And you just get a nice glory shot of the Cerritos being a hero and doing what it does best. But what I really like layered onto that... Is the captain's yacht coming in as well?
I got chills.
The zoom
I'm
in.
Like,
oh, it's
I'm
so
watching
good.
A fucking cartoon about Star Trek.
It's
and I'm
so
getting chills.
Clever.
Because I thought, well, the captain can't be inside this big Orion ship because, you know, Boimler is acting captain, which is a whole other level of badass. So, like, really elevated the scene that he's in the fucking captain's chair.
Yes.
And at first, I'm thinking,
that feels
great. Why is he in the captain's chair? Where's her crew? And then their shot of this, you know, massive Orion ship, and it's not working. And I'm thinking, well, why would they need to be inside there? And then it starts to blow up. Well, certainly they're not inside there. They're going to be beaming somebody out of there. And then out of like the sort of explosion and all this chaos that's happening from this impact comes the yacht.
Yes, the captain's yacht.
And it's like the first crew, the big honchos are all in there, and I'm just like,
let's go.
I literally was like, fuck yeah.
It's a beautifully directed and orchestrated bit
really
of animation.
Fun.
It was so well done, and you don't have to bend belief. I feel like every ship is doing what it's supposed to do in that situation. Mm-hmm. It's
they just
so
kind of like they just
clever.
Launch in there, kind of hidden behind there, and just waiting, and then they punch it. They go through, they get through, and then, you know,
so
Mariner is eventually beamed out and rescued by the mother, and then the ship is blown to pieces with the paywall bomb on it. And I just thought all of that worked. I thought Mariner's position in all of it as this lone character that can do so much. Mm-hmm. They've shown us this the entire season, that this character is designed for taking on all of the pressure.
Yeah.
Of a solo mission like this and kicking ass. If I was, I guess I'm going to write down a sin because she was like, she just got hugs. Where were her fucking props?
I thought she was going to get promoted again.
I
thought she was going to be full lieutenant, honestly. I love the argument that she has with Nick and like just calling him out on the carpet. Just be like, no, you're a dick. Your ego killed that kid at Starfleet. You're doing the same shit now. This is all about you
and
you
shot.
Taking the lead.
She was fucking almost shot.
Yeah, she was going to take that.
But at the same time, she would have survived because that's just how everything happens.
Of course.
But still. So all of that sequence with the ship and like Mariner's sort of position was really, really delightful to kind of watch. The whole like B plot of the crew needing to get resources to go and attack this big wall. I mean, it's fine. It's obviously setting up for the departure of our beloved character.
Tendu. Yeah.
Why?
You have got the, well, let's pause on that. You have got the contrivance of we can't fire first, and which forces the crew to find another way, which allows the episode to happen. So that Mariner can have time with Locarno and we can have a B plot of trying to get the resources they need to win and set up Tendi's kind of sort of exit. So
yeah,
little bit contrived.
They do go to this, you know, space to like, they go to the Orions and then we get to see Tendi's sister again. There was quite a bit of like callbacks in this one. We have the Mark Twain callback.
Which wasn't needed at all, but I kind of love it.
I
do declare we've reached an accord. Computer arch.
The fact that they didn't say computer arch is
a crime.
It's a crime. Absolute it was crime. The only good part of the Mark Twain bit the first time I saw it.
Computer arch.
I don't know. Sometimes it's like, you know, they think it's funny, and so you're like, you know, but
yeah,
it can't all hit. But they go to fight, and how did you feel? Like, how did you feel about the whole Orion bit? The fighting, the thing. Okay, yeah, I did too. It was a good skip for me.
It's the contrivance thing for me. It felt so out of place and disconnected from the rest of the episode, which can be fine. It's okay. But for me, okay, we did it. Fine, we did it. It didn't really sing for me. It didn't really do much for me. Definitely the weakest part of the episode. We just keep taking the piss out of Miglimo. Like, I don't know. I don't get what we're doing with him, to be honest.
I was confused. I mean, the fluffing out, like, and this maybe is going into the sins part, but what didn't work for me about it was that everything kind of had like a different, it went a different way. She didn't get the ship because she offers, Tendi offers herself. The fight looks like Miglimo is going to win, but then somehow he doesn't, even though his opponent passed out and he's still clearly...
Yeah.
Like, it just because he couldn't get her off of him.
He got squashed. So it's a draw, if anything.
It should have been a draw. Yeah. That was confusing. So I don't mind the idea that Tendi knew her crew well enough to send in the right battle person.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have a hard time believing that Dr. Miglimo would have been standing in the line and an option. But at the same time, they get to kind of create whatever.
Of course.
Yeah. Whatever their systems are of being able to battle each other, they get to make up whatever they want.
But it's also a classic. Tell him before he goes into the fight. You don't need to tell him in the moment.
No.
Great for us. It's a dramatic episode. But why didn't you give him a heads up? Poor buddy.
You should have been like, just fluff up. Just like, hey, here you go. Fluff up.
She's allergic to your feathers. Fluff up. That's the sentence that should have happened if we weren't in a cartoon.
Yeah, that should have happened. Amazing. Yeah.
Yeah, so a little bit skippable.
I think so too. I mean, obviously we're going to get the warship, and we do get the warship, and that goes wrong because it's not actually a fully optimized warship. And then, of course, our crew shows their ingenuity by making it into a battering ram.
You know what I would have liked more is that you could have done the Orion, okay, trade me for the ship, let's do that. And instead of having that trial by barter combat thing, have more time doing the engineering on the Orion ship.
Oh,
like, that's
you
a
nerd.
Classic tickets.
I want to see more.
Subroutines getting rerouted. Show me the Joe packs.
Show me the tension between these characters who think they're always right about engineering shit.
Oh, fuck the tension. I want the countdown time of these are the systems that we have to get operational. Like, here's what we need to prioritize to get this boat going. Like, I would have loved to see more of the getting to the plan that they landed on rather than the trial by. We didn't need more combat in this episode.
I think that would have been boring as fuck.
You would. Well, now I know what episodes to not show you.
I don't know. Can you imagine dedicating like 2 or 3 minutes of an episode to them having a whole bunch of tech talk that fails and then arriving at the conclusion that they're going to use a battering ram, but then also asking the audience to not know that it's a battering ram until the big reveal at the end? It would have been such a tension.
Allow me to introduce you to most of TNG. You just described half of TNG and Voyager in one sentence. Legit.
Oh no.
Listen, you're gonna have a rough time some point.
Oh no.
We'll avoid the Geordi episodes then, because that's all they are.
Okay.
That's amazing. You may be on the wrong ship.
Apparently I have a lot to learn about Star Trek still.
Couple of other little moments. The only time I really got super eye-rolly was when, like, Nick said about the Trinar shield. And I was like, what's a Trinar shield other than a plot device? Like, that's all it is this indestructible shield that they can't get through, but they can if you throw something big enough at it.
But
like,
only
I'm not
for a moment. It just pops a little hole that heals itself.
I'm not a fan of brute force beating energy fields like that. Worth it, because it's an awesome moment, but it does, it's like, here's this impossible thing that cannot be penetrated until you find a way to penetrate it.
Yep, and I'm going to get to one of that in the sins as well.
Yeah, that's fair. I just really loved Billups. I like how everybody got a moment in this episode. I love how Billups got really defensive of the Cerritos. Like, he started rolling up his sleeves. He's like, she's not laughing stock of the California. She is the pride of the California class. And Shanks or Ransom is the one that has to hold him back.
Yeah.
Oh, it's
or
so
when
good.
Like the really big buff guy that's head of security was like foaming at the mouth to try to go to combat. That was really fun too.
Let him fight.
I thought Dr. Cat Meow was going to go in there. That's what I thought.
Just
destroy this person. That's kind of what I thought.
I love that so much.
Another moment to mention popped up in the chat is Talyn being Cerritos strong in the end. Ugh. Let's talk about the end of this episode. We really haven't gone into that just yet.
No, that's fair. That's fair.
The end of this episode has everybody, you know, obviously reunited and they're all having a good time. And Talyn, you know, shows her love of the group. And Tendi's like, don't say it unless you mean it, and then is immediately taken away. Like, oh, I'm finally getting the friend I always wanted. Bye! You know.
I love that she's part of the... She feels really part of the Lower Decks crew now. It feels like Talyn is in there, and they've just released a series of Funko Pops based on the Lower Decks crew. And Mike McMahon said, if these sell really, really well, the next one he personally wants is Talyn. So I think he really sees Talyn as a Lower Decker as well. Like, she has really connected to the crew. I love it so much.
It is really nice. And it's nice that it wasn't forced in every episode. Even the tension between Rutherford and his like rival engineer guy, that coming back up in this episode was really nice, because we haven't seen that since they had their little tiff in the previous episode about like trying to kind of
another
make
callback. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Really
but then
good.
Even as they were like walking past each other in 10-4, like Rutherford, you know, so good. That was really nice.
Do we think that Tendi is gone? Do we think she's coming back? Because that was her last thing of You've Got This with the score was very ominous. Like, it almost felt like we weren't dealing with our Tendi. Or was that just her shifting into, I'm now not Starfleet, I'm in Orion mode to get through this?
I don't know. I think that there's some predictions that the chat's been talking about her coming back in by the next season's episode 3. So I think, like, if I'm going by some of what the chat has been saying during our live show, that some of the consensus is that they wouldn't bring her out. But this character is really interesting, right? She's not really been part of the medical team. She's been part of this, like, engineering. Like, her love seems to be with Rutherford
in the sciences
and in the engineering. Like, they've they geek out about all kinds of engineering stuff. Then they also put a stop to their romance. So this could be the end of a character that maybe makes an appearance, but she has essentially been written out of Starfleet at this point in time. Like, she made a promise to go do her duties as this person. Now, she either does such a great job that she gets kicked out by, you know, the queen or whatever, because her sister doesn't want her around any longer. Like, maybe she goes in and she does too good. So they can write her back in whenever they want to.
Of course they can. Yeah.
And reintroduce maybe a Rutherford interest, because obviously he was devastated. And of course, why wouldn't he be? But there is something to be said about having too many characters to balance in a show that has a shorter runtime and already has a big cast. We see a lot of characters every episode when you're talking about the A team and the B team kind of a thing. So I think that they needed to write somebody out. And with T'Lyn sort of taking a stronger approach of being the voice of reason in their group, I think it was a needed adjustment for just the storytelling aspect of what it would take to have a group of people that are adventuring together. Yeah. So I don't know. I don't think she's gone forever, but I wouldn't be surprised if she's kept from being a permanent character. It just seems like it could work.
I think it would be insane to not bring her back. I'm 97.9% sure that she's coming back. It might be as a pirate for a little bit, but I think she'll be back in Starfleet. Like, she's worked really, really hard.
She loves it, and it was her goal.
Be with Starfleet and to get promoted and to be there. And I just think the chemistry between our lower deckers is so, so good. So I, for one, hope she's coming back. I'm pretty sure she is.
Do you feel like she'll go away, learn some things about herself, come back, have a different type of a character aspects, and maybe replace a character that dies? Like, who are they going to kill off? If they had, if you had to kill one character next season to get Tendi back, who would it be?
Bloody hell. I'm not a fan of killing people off for the sake of emotional punches. Unless it makes sense for their story. Are we talking about who do I not want to see anymore? Because at the minute, I kill off Migly Moo. Like, what's the point?
But Migly Moo feels like he's not part of the Lower Decks characters.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know. Rutherford, maybe. And that hurts me to say, but I think unless we give him something new to do, his story's kind of done. And now he's just there. I would switch Tendi for either. Rutherford.
Yeah. I don't know. I think that Rutherford could go.
I think he could. I hope they don't, because I don't think we need that. Yeah, I don't think that's what this series needs, but he would be the sacrificial engineer.
I agree,
engineer.
Though. Migly Moo, I don't need to see anymore.
No, it's so disappointing.
But as far as, like, our people.
Yeah.
It was a horrible question. I'm glad I asked it. Should we move on?
Yeah, let's do it.
As far as everything else, I don't think I have anything we didn't really cover. I think this was a really great season. I think this is a really great season ending. We even had Mariner sort of reflecting on and apologizing to her friends about her behavior. So they once again bring some depth to that decision. So I liked it.
Yeah, I think it was great. It wasn't too cliffhangery either. It felt resolved. Like, it wasn't shock someone's been arrested. It was, here's the end of that season. Here's your consequences. Now, there was another awesome Wrath of Khan homage. And so this is when the Genesis device blows up.
Yeah.
And it creates the nebula. And you see the rings slowly expanding and forming. And then you get the zoom out, zoom out, zoom out of the ship zooming away.
Yeah.
That is a shot-for-shot remake of the end of the Wrath of Khan.
Oh.
When the Genesis device goes off. It's one of the coolest shots in the history of Star Trek, because the Enterprise is at warp, but we're actually seeing it from the outside.
Yeah, like,
so you're seeing
out.
The warp trail behind it, the Enterprise zooming away, and this cloud expanding and following it. And it's just this, the warp engine noise of zoom, zoom. And it will go past us, and then we'll zoom out in front of it again. You'll get another zoom. Then you zoom out in front of it again. You get another zoom. It's such a great reenaction of that shot. I tingled when I saw that. I was like, it's so good. So good.
That was really cool. And I also, the idea that they named this planet after this monster, what a weird decision.
And Meccano, he's still a bad person.
technically his atoms are in there, so we're just going to name it Locano. But you know what they could have done? Anything else. But maybe that's getting too much into the dings.
Perhaps. Well, having said that, love that episode. Great way to end the season. Lower Decks continues to impress. Let's head over to engineering for some sins. Battle stations, everyone.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
Warning. Warp core collapse in 10 seconds.
This is the part of the show where we re-engage our sin brains, remind ourselves that no TV shows without sin, even our beloved Star Trek Lower Decks, as good as it is. I actually have quite a list week. Shall I go first?
God, no. I think I want to start with the fact that they didn't name the planet after the guy that he killed. I think
I think that they should have named it. Yeah, that would have been great.
It was a thought that I had during it. It was a thought that was brought up in live chat. And then somebody else in the chat said something like, this is the first time we've actually seen this character before. That it was just part of the backstory talked about. But this is the first time we've seen them. Mm-hmm. And I don't know.
Because he's already dead at the start of the episode.
I just feel like it's a weird thing to name a planet after a person who has literally tried to usurp every single... I don't even know how to describe this character because he's new to me, but it seems like he was pretty much an asshole. So
he didn't
have
any kind of redeeming moment at the end. He didn't sacrifice himself. He didn't do anything. He just was a dick.
Yeah. Like, name the planet, I was a dick. That would have been better.
This guy sucks is what the planet should have been called. Amazing. Okay, I've got a sin that I would go back and add into episode one or two.
Oh my god.
Yeah. So
you're not allowed to do that.
Good. I'm doing it anyway.
Okay.
You can court martial me. The crew, you do not have to follow me as I disobey the ambassador's orders, but there will be a court martial at the end of it if you do. In the previously on, it shows the Klingon ship getting destroyed. And it is getting hit by Locano's
transporter beam zappy laser
thing. It is even sneakier than I originally thought it was, because this thing, because it's so early on in the series, it zaps and attacks the Klingon ship, and you see it go through the Klingon ship and out the other side. Like, it looks like it's penetrating it, punching a hole in it, and then exploding. And the rest of them, it's way more ambiguous. The closer we get to the reveal, the flashing light is more ambiguous. That one was really naughty. I kind of love it. But it was naughty. Because you are deliberately being misleading here. And there's no reason for it.
Fun.
He doesn't
it's
need
fun.
To be misleading. No, he's doing what he's doing.
No, on the off chance that there was a camera just attached to a nearby station, which is the only reason we have this footage in the first place, right? Yeah.
Right.
I want to sin that this episode had none of the people from the previous episode on the planet that stole back their ship. They literally rallied for Mariner and then did not show up at all this episode. There was no Klingon. There was no unified ship showing up being like, we're here to get back our stuff. Like they rally for her. And I guess that this ship also didn't have our crew as well. So we're starting off this episode with the assumption that at some point between last episode and this episode, this warbird appears with Boimler and pals and is like, hey, we're back. And then they're like, you know what? We're going to fuck off. Good luck.
It would have been great to use them, wouldn't it?
I think it would have been really fun to use them. Yeah.
It seemed very, very peculiar. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Space Koala also doesn't make a return, which would have been...
Would it have been too much koala?
Never. You shut your mouth. There is never too much koala. It would have been tricky to sin, but I would have gone about it somehow. It's the villain's plan and how Nick basically has to bank on the idea that Starfleet and the collected species that he's pissed off, the Ferengi, who are now allied with Starfleet and the Federation, the Romulans, the Klingons, the Cardassians, He's banking that all of them won't go in guns blazing, because this adventure would have been over sooner if Starfleet had given the Cerritos the permission to go in using phasers and attack and whatnot. Somehow, he predicted that there would be a galactic accord to do fuck all about this until we've talked about it for a little while and decided the course of action. No. The Klingons, Romulans, and Cardassians are most likely just going in there because their pride has been hurt. I can kind of buy that it happened. I don't buy that Nick could predict with certainty that that would happen. And that's the crux of it. Like, his villain's plan is banking on this, and I don't think he could have done that with confidence.
My next sin is this wall, this barrier that cannot be penetrated and you can't get out, but then they don't actually show us how they get out before the end of the episode. And sure, maybe it would have been boring. Maybe it was just going into like the main little hub station and pushing a button.
Yeah, maybe. I guess, but it is.
But they really like amped up that there's no way out except for by like Nick. And then Nick dies, but that doesn't mean that the shell around this thing he created, everyone's trapped in there.
Yeah,
he's created a big trap.
They must have just turned it off from his ship, I would imagine.
But his ship exploded.
No, the Saber Runner exploded. Mariner's ship. I think that's what blew up.
But Nick's ship was still in the nebulous, too.
His ship was right next to it. Yeah.
Everything's like... And it was a really big part of space, too. There was like a fucking planet. And there was like multiple planets.
For a second, I thought it was the Q web from Encounter at Farpoint. So you know that red grid that Q makes in space that traps the Enterprise? I kind of thought that Q was stepping in and he made the grid and he was teaming up with Nick.
Oh, that's interesting. That would have been really fun.
But
yeah, I just got confused by that. It's like, wait, I thought everyone was going to be captured inside of this place because nobody could get out. Not even the people that were aligned with Nick could get out. But
yeah, absolutely. Yep. It's huge and it's unexplained how it gets shut down. But yeah, I think they just went into the ship and turned it off, maybe.
I mean, sure. I guess now, like, wah-wah. For this big impenetrable space that can turned off and on by a button.
So Mariner needs to stop being great at CinemaSins because it's kind of annoying. No, it's not really annoying. It's annoying for me because then I have to backpedal on a sin. But there are three binars. And just when I explained the binars have to be in pairs, and it's really interesting when there's one of them,
yeah,
we have the throwaway line from Mariner saying, can you even have three binars?
Yeah.
And I get it. Like, it's not impossible, but it's kind of a big deal. So I think it needed a bit more weight than that, or have four of them and call it a quadnar shield or something. It's like, three binars is kind of a big deal. And if we're going to do that, I want to do it, and I want to get into it and explore
you understand that,
because it's
it.
A big deal. Yeah, it's a big thing, losing your pair. That's interesting for me.
Are we sinning that Will Wheaton was in this?
Always.
Okay.
Shut up, Wesley.
Right. That's in the theme of Star Trek. I secretly loved it, though, but I'm going to make that my pretend sin.
Yeah, shut up,
okay.
Wesley.
Okay.
I'm glad he was there.
Okay, I am.
Addressing that Nick Locarno looks like Tom Paris. I mean, I kind of like how they did that, but we've still seen it. Because, like, you're addressing the elephant in the room, you're going to get dinged for it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see the resemblance at all.
My next sin is the villain's plan, including also showing his cards. Like, not only are we here and you can't reach us because we have this cool wall, but we also have this, you know, Genesis machine. Maybe show them the Genesis machine. Sure, that's going to scare the shit out of everybody. But it's like, it's almost like he showed the schematics of the wall on the screen. Like, he did a PowerPoint presentation to all of the people who could be his enemies. Like, why not just let them show up and figure it out themselves? You know, you've given them what it looks like, how big it is, and we need it for exposition. But that's a terrible time to reveal it.
It really is. And I guess it's because he's going on a recruitment drive. But there are, I feel, better ways to do that. Because you're
maybe,
not actually talking to the lower decks. You're talking to the bridge crew. Unless everybody on the ship is tuned into this, you're not reaching the people that you need to reach.
Yeah.
So yeah, we I think we'd seen that. I've got a classic sin. Where is the Enterprise cliche? Because where is the Enterprise? Like, this is a pretty big deal. Like, this is something that the entire quadrant is debating and talking about, and the Cerritos is the only ship that rebels to do something about it. And I get it, they have an investment because of Mariner, but the Enterprise is kind of well known for disobeying orders and going off and saving the day, as is Riker on the Titan. So it is kind of, when you have these galactic, these missions of galactic import, it's always going to be strange when the Cerritos is the one that saves the day. Because it's like, there's got to be some other rebels in Starfleet that are willing to step in.
Yeah. I don't really have anything else that I can think of. So how many more do you have, Captain?
I've got a couple more, not huge ones.
Okay. Well, then I'll just go to the chat and I'll grab a couple that I know about. I got to give props to Loder in the chat who says, Sin, one of the admirals says that Locarno didn't steal any Starfleet ships. So where does the USS Pizarro come from and where is its crew?
Yeah, the Saber Runner class. Yeah, it could just be a derelict ship. I think somebody replied, ship they found. Like, Starfleet are getting pretty careless with their ships by the looks of it. Like, leaving them lying around. Yeah.
Okay. No, I thought this was a really great point, though.
We'd seen it, yeah. You've explained all of the other ships, but you didn't want to explain the Starfleet ship that you stole?
The one that Mariner has to have the access codes to be able to fly.
Right.
And there was a way to say it, because whenever she's on it riding away, he could have had something in that line that would have, instead of like, why did you let her get on the ship? Or how did she get that going? Or something like,
yeah.
Like, I thought that was a piece of junk we found over here. Well, how come it's going? Like, there's a way that they could have at least addressed how that happened.
Why is that? Yeah, for sure. While we're on the ship, how is she piling it on her own? It's too easy. Like, why do you need a crew? She's pulling off some great maneuvers, firing phasers, jumping to warp or attempting to. All of the maneuvers, who needs a crew? Honestly, just talk to the computer and let the computer do it. Starfleet is way over manpowered.
Yeah, apparently. I thought that there was way more people needed, but you know what? When you have a Genesis machine as your first mate, then I guess you don't really
good motivation. Mm-hmm, yeah. Mm-hmm. I did love her just calling it GD. It's like, sorry GD, I guess we gotta go blow you up now.
I'll do a Sin removal from Flyboy. Excellent shot of Mariner at the window of the captain's yacht looking back at the Pizarro. She never meant Nick any harm. She just needed to stop him.
It's a beautiful shot.
It was a really beautiful shot. It happened really quickly and there was a lot of emotion in that. I like that Mariner's also she wasn't against saving him. In fact, she was like, we've got to go back. But then Captain Freeman, just in case you didn't know who that was, makes the final call like, oh, we're way too close. We got to go.
Yeah, and we got to not get Genesis.
Yeah, that became the captain's decision to kind of like when to make that call. It didn't have to be Mariner making that call. Mariner's heart was kind of there. I think that's a great send-off.
Yeah. No, I like that. It's a really, really good shot and represents a really interesting choice that had to be made. We mentioned this earlier, but we would send the cliche of captain of the ship disobeys Starfleet's orders, crew comes with them, and most of all, nothing bad happens. At the end, they just brush it aside.
Like, yeah.
You can disobey orders as long as you save the day.
Here's another sin removal from KC. The USS Pizarro was named after digital modeler Fabio Pizarro, who worked for Eagle Moss and passed away last year. His designs were used for the show as well as some of the models Eagle Moss produced.
Nice. That's awesome.
That's kind of cool.
That's great.
Well, now we know why it's in the show.
What a legacy.
So that's, I guess, really we would sin it and then we would immediately do a sin off.
Yes,
no,
we
no,
would.
No, no, no. That's not our style. Our style is to give a sin off and then to sin it.
Find a way to add it back on so we don't actually have to do the negative. Yes. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's called the Rick and Morty effect.
Mm-hmm. Is it? No, it's not.
My very last one kind of is the cliche that it will take months. Somehow it will only take hours. This is the Orion ship. It's like, it'll take months to get the ship working, and yet they find a way to make the plan work in a matter of hours.
Yep.
Kind of a pass because they didn't have to get too much turned on, but it's still, man, you came up with this plan quick.
It was so fun to watch. You want to give a pass for an episode you like do. This.
We would have a sin removal for that scene because it's so awesome.
So much happens in this episode that is all about momentum movement and not explaining it, which is where our sin brains really get activated. It's been so hard to sin this season. So I still find it difficult to sin this season.
I want to rewatch that scene right now. It's so good.
David in the chat says, Sin, how much power would it take to put a shield around an entire star system?
And many powers.
Where was the generator? Regardless of how much Locarno sucks, he does deserve some props for that technology.
I love that. Look, nobody is complimenting him on how awesome and unbelievable this shield is. Yeah. It's a good way to phrase that, Sin. That's pretty much all that I have. I'm sure we'll have a few more Sins from the live chat if you hang around for the outtakes. Before we sign off, a big thank you for 100,000 downloads of Captain's Pod.
Can you believe it?
That's incredible. Between all of you, we have 100,000 downloads.
Thank you so much.
Cool.
It's really, really cool.
It's a fun ride.
And I guess it means that we have a few people that will listen no matter what we do. So next season, when we're going to be reviewing something other than Lower Decks, it's guaranteed to blow ass. And thanks for downloading.
Yep. Sorry, guys. So next season of Captain's Pod, but there's not going to be an immediate break. You'll have an episode next week. Next season is going to have a couple of interviews that will appear. But next week, your homework... we're going to be doing some TOS. We're going to watch our first, the original series.
That's finally
episode
happening.
With Captain Kirk, Spock, McCoy. Your homework is The Trouble with Tribbles.
Are we watching Trouble with Tribbles?
We're going to do The Trouble with Tribbles.
Okay.
The reason I've picked that episode is because it is a really fun one. I want to give TOS a fair chance. So we're not going to go in with the terrible, campy, crappy stuff. I want to give
you a
solid episode that shows you the crew having fun, doing stuff. It's up there, like top five TOS episodes of all time.
Right.
Give you that foundation, then we do some crazy shit. But yeah, we're going to do a little bit of TOS and see how you feel about it. So we're going all the way back to the 60s, people. We're on the Sinterprise. Can't wait for that. Anything else before we sign off?
For those of you who have just joined us during this most recent season of Lower Decks or even from Strange New Worlds, we have certain seasons of the podcast where we don't have anything new being released, so we go back to old stuff, which means we come to you guys for your suggestions a lot. You can either email those to us, captainspod@cinemasins.com, or you can join us on Twitter or Discord. It's discord.gg/cinemasins, and within the CinemaSins Discord, there is a section that's dedicated to Captain's Pod, and there's lots of conversations that sort of happen there. So if you have a suggestion you want us to watch, you can get it to us any number of ways. Ian has been compiling a lot of the suggestions that have come in over the last couple of years. And so we do have obviously a lot to cover, and hopefully all of it will be fun. But according to the chat, sometimes the suggestions have gone awry. So we want to blame you for those this next season, not Ian.
Exactly. I do want to have a kind of theme that ties the season together. So we'll get thinking
okay,
about
what's
that.
The theme?
I don't want it to be too random. My theme that literally just popped into my head is to do stories that are continued across iterations of Star Trek, kind of in honor of Lower Decks and how Lower Decks does that. Because there is a follow-up
like Tribbles
episode.
Tribbles kind of like goes through multiple.
Tribbles gets, this specific episode gets picked up in another iteration. So I almost want to do callbacks and see how that pans out. So let's use that as a framework for some suggestions.
Keep your eye on Discord for updates and other things that we have going on as CinemaSins. I'm excited for this next season. Thank you guys for joining us for another season of Star Trek material.
Yeah. You guys are the best. We love it. We will see you next week. And until then, I'm Captain Ian. I have to go accept some flappity flappity fisticuffs from a foul fiend.
Oh, and I demand barter by combat!
Finish him! Live long and potspam.
Thanks for listening. Want to connect with the show? Our hailing frequencies are always open through captainspod@cinemasins.com. Like, comment, and subscribe on your podcast player of choice, and be sure to visit cinemasins.com.
Okay, you ready to go?
Yeah, I'm ready.
Oh my gosh. Are you like so ready?
I'm like super fucking ready, okay.
I like readier than anything, okay. What?
Are you okay?
I'm good. I just had like my it was a fucking disaster, like that last 5 seconds. I realized I hadn't added our cameras back to the stream. My throat started to close up and my earphone fell out. So I was like, battle stations, everyone, computer, divert energy to the warp core. Get my ear sorted out and get us out of here.
Ian is refusing to just do the show.
Oh, I thought you had more to go.
I'll take over.
There was one little cool thing that I really, really liked that I wanted to talk about once I've stopped hiccuping.
Welcome to the hiccup part of the show where we hiccup together. Everybody hiccup
together.
Wait,
where are your hiccups? No, it's your dinosaur hiccup.
You guys want to know what it sounds like when a pterodactyl hiccups? Because that's what
that's what that sounds like.
My dogs are wanting to go outside, as they always do.
Of course.
I won't let them. So I think what I'm going to do is I'm going to, when we say go, I'm going to run over, hit the button, let them outside, run back in, hit the button, watch it, and then they're outside the whole time, and then I'll let them in and then do the show. That way, it's not delayed anymore.
Wait, what button?
The go button.
The go live button? So during that 30-second countdown?
No. Sorry. The go play the show button.
Oh,
got it.
Not clear. None of that was clear.
No.
If I actually shaved my beard off, I think there would be riots. I don't know if you, Aaron, or Iris would actually look at me at all.
If you shaved your beard?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we would look at you. That's how, I mean, I look at the people that I talk to. Would I like you anymore? No. Okay, let me just tell you something that's going on behind the scenes that you don't know about. Ian and Iris will sometimes start talking to each other. I don't stop this, by the way. So it's my fault. About something that Iris came up with on her own to store food in his beard to eat later.
The beard nom nom game.
It's evolved into called the nom nom game. And there are some rules, but they talk about it. And I know at some point in time during your visit, this is going to happen. You keep talking about it.
Yeah, we're just trying to find a spare hour where we can decide the type of food and just the logistics of doing it. The latest thing is that she said she was going to get a pair of tongs to pull them out. And I'm like, why do you need tongs? You don't need tongs to do this. And she's like, what if it's a really big chunk of food? And I'm like, then don't
do
it.
And my thing is, I'm over in the corner going, why are we talking about this like it's actually going to be happening? And then I realize, oh, it's Ian and Iris. This is going to happen. And there are some rules about what is allowed to go in the beard and what is not.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
There's a really good chance that you will have to shave your beard because what she puts in your beard to nom nom later is going to just like congeal in there and it's going to turn into a whole thing.
No, we've made it really clear. We established that there would be nothing liquidy or sticky that's going in there. She's very clear on the rule. She's more protective of my beard than I am.
I want to jump into this one. What does Danae have against the transporter? Past few episodes has her wanting to run to the holodeck instead of the transporter. But let me tell you what I have against it. Okay. I've learned a lot after listening to Ian talk about Star Trek and transporters. And what I know is that part of me disappears every time, you know, and I just...
Oh, it's so much worse than that.
And I need the exercise as well.
It's so much worse.
It's really the only...
All of you disappears and is reconstituted as something else. Not just a little bit. Every bit of you disappears and is then reimagined from the computer's memory of what it thought you were when it picked you up.
Can you imagine, like,
no,
if the computer just thought that you were going to be a little bit taller every single time?
If it was reading your thoughts and just like, well, hey, this is what you wanted.
John's saying you're wrong. Lodair, like, listen, we want to learn.
As I understand it, the transports of the computer breaks you down into your constituent elements, transfers that energy and those particles along a matter stream and then reconstitutes it as it thinks you were put together. It uses some fuckery to do it.
I don't know how to talk about it. All I know is it scares me enough that if I could just walk down a couple corridors and get my steps in for the day, that's probably what I should do.
We need to watch more Turbo Lift Go Wrong episodes that put you off using the Turbo Lift.
David Ellis says, I get it. I love to have a transporter, but I would not be the first one to use it.
This guy gets it. Yep. Never be the first.
Lodair says the transporter transports the original particles.
I don't know that that's confirmed.
Cameron says it uses the pattern to rebuild you. It has to use the original molecules. If you use the particles available at the target spot, you wouldn't be able to beam things into space.
Fair. That is fair.
Moving your bits, guys. We're just moving our bits around.
Moving our bits around.
It's energy to matter conversion, says J.A. Yeah. And Phil says they kind of explain it in the episode where Riker got his clone.
Yeah, there's got to be extra bits if you can make a clone. Like, it's matter to energy, energy to matter. And it just, it still is reconstituting that energy based on the memory of what it had. So it may not be new bits, but it is rebuilding you from memory.
Nick says, I think it is moving your bits. Like, okay, I kind of want to have something that's like a bumper sticker that says, transporter, just moving bits.
So this is like the Transporter Defense League. We're just moving bits.
Just like, just moving the bits.
Oh, I love this. Michael Okuda said, when asked how does the Heisenberg compensator work, he replied, very well, thank you.
Okay, I'm gonna read the uncertainty principle because I didn't know before now. Formulated, this is a quick Google search. This is the first thing that pops up on Google without any clicking whatsoever, which means I've not clicked on this article. I have not verified this content. I am just going for a simple answer. I will say too that there's some really interesting formulaic equations in my eyes. There is a triangle with a squiggly X and a triangle and like a little fancy P.
Math
and like the
thing.
Little nom nom, you know, we got waka, some waka, stuff waka. Happening here. So obviously smart stuff is going on when there's hieroglyphics on my screen. Formulated by the German physicist and Nobel laureate Werner Heisenberg in 1927.
Why did you say his name like that?
I like trying to say words weirdly.
You like moving your mouth bits?
I really like my mouth bits.
Werner Heisenberg.
If I can swing my bottom jaw.
He would just correct
possible.
Everybody. No, that's not my name. My name is Warren Heinberg.
My name is... The uncertainty principle states that we cannot know both the position and speed of a particle.
Correct.
Such as a photon or electron with perfect accuracy. The more we nail down the particle's position, the less we know about its speed and vice versa. That is the quick... TLDR, yeah. And how this relates to transporter beams and why I would prefer to walk somewhere, isn't it obvious? I love this point from Flyboy. Notice Beckett was never called by name in the flashback, leaving open the question of whether she was going by Freeman or Mariner at the time. My guess is it's the former. Because yeah. Everybody knows that their last name is Freeman.
Yeah, of course. I'm almost certain that she changed her name to be separated from her famous Captain Mum and her famous Admiral Dad. That's got to be why she's called Mariner. I have one from Scott Lego. Having never watched anything Star Trek but the new movies, where should I start?
Oh, can I take this one?
Please do, because I'm not good at this question.
Okay, Scott. So let me just say, first and foremost, I am newer to Star Trek, and I have had the absolute privilege of actually speaking to some of the people who have written episodes and who have acted on their shows. Just we're really, really lucky to have had some really cool conversations with these very passionate Trek people. And one thing I've noticed is that when the topic comes up of like what Danae should watch next as the new person, the conversation always goes the same place, even though none of them know it, which is the very next question is, Scott Lego, what do you like to watch?
Right. Star Trek has so much.
You have to answer that question. So like when you're thinking about picking up a TV show, are you like a murder mystery person? Are you like action adventure or romance love story, monster of the week, highly intellectual conversations? Like what kind of playful, fun comedy? So think about like what you like and then the Trek nerds will have a suggestion for you. And then, and even better, the nerds start fighting about which one is the right one.
Oh my gosh, they really do.
And then you
do.
Just get to sit back and watch them all like throw out titles of stuff. And then until one of them comes out the winner at the end.
Honestly, my answer, my genuine answer, usually lands on TNG. Because it is the launching point for Star Trek today as we know it. TNG connects into Deep Space Nine, connects into Voyager, connects into Lower Decks, connects into Picard. I don't know, unless you want me to pick out individual episodes, starting from the very beginning of TNG feels like the best way forward
TNG?
To me. The Next Generation, because it connects to everything else.
No.
Where would
absolutely
you start?
Absolutely not. Strange New Worlds, hands down.
Oh, no, you're
Strange
right.
New Worlds is fucking beautiful.
Right.
It's new, but it's also old school, so it has an old school vibe to, like, sci-fi
yeah,
stuff.
Yeah, no, you're right.
It's more modernly paced, and they do, especially just season one of Strange New Worlds
is incredible.
It's fucking incredible. I like intellectual shows, so probably more towards those.
TNG.
Shows.
TNG. That's about as intellectual as it gets. But I still agree. I think with a modern brain, then Strange New Worlds is the way forward, and then TNG.
Am I the nerd arguing with the nerd now?
You are. You've done it. You've seen enough Star Trek to have an opinion.
Oh, no.
You have.
Oh, no. Deep Space Nine is pretty intellectual, too. Like, when you were talking about intellect, I was thinking Deep Space Nine, because TNG, for me, is more like fun and episodic and not really intellectual, but, like, Deep Space Nine seemed to be really in on itself. Like, it stays in that world, and it has a continual story that it's constantly building on, which seems
Correct.
To be pretty intellectual.
It's possibly the least Star Trek of all the Star Trek, though, because by the time you get into, like, season 5 and 6, you're really serialized. Like, and it's excellent. It's one of my favorite shows, but it's a very serialized war story. It's much more Star Wars than it is Star Trek in some ways. Shoot me, but fine.
Interesting.
TNG feels like core Star Trek to me. But I agree. Season 1 and Season 2 aren't great places to start. So I think with TNG, it is a good idea to find a watch list. And here are the top 20 episodes of TNG to start with. Because they can be watched in isolation, it's good to take it and do it.
Lodair has offered to send you a watch guide if you would like. You guys are on different platforms.
I can include it in the episode description because I have that from you, Lodair. So I'll make a note to put it in the description of this episode.
When this episode comes out next week, just click on the description of the episode and there's going to be a watch guide attached to it.
Oh, Slab has done some maths. I was told there would be no maths. First Lower Decks episode is Stardate 57436, putting it in June of 2380. The last star date in a few badges more is 58934 and set it as December 2381. So all four seasons are within 18 months of each other. Yeah, that's what I thought, actually. Nice.
Bravo.
That's really, really cool. So that puts it
right after Nemesis.
I'm so sorry I'm late. I was just talking to my sister about protecting abortion rights.
Wait, didn't we already do that in Ohio? We passed issue 1 last year.
I know, by a wide margin too. But now it's up to our state Supreme Court to decide whether they enforce it or ignore it.
Ignore it? Will they really do that?
They will if we don't keep extremists out of the court, but we can protect our rights by electing Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that. Listen, I can barely remember what I had for breakfast this morning.
Here's a trick. All you have to do is remember, don't stop fighting.
Don't stop fighting. Oh, I get it. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, Forbes. I love that.
Tell everyone you know, if you supported issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue, a community of women who care about reproductive rights as much as you do.